Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga, and this evening we'll talk about the unconditional $60 billion of Chinese financial assistance to Africa. Will the assistance change the desperate economic problems faced by many African countries? And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Makori, host of VOA's Africa 54. Vincent, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here, Douglas.
You're very much welcome. And joining us also is regular panelist, Lemani Mugula. He joins us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Gentlemen, Suleiman, welcome back to the show again.
Thank you very much. And evening to Vincent.
Oh, good evening, my brother.
Yes, as I said, our topic tonight, we're looking at the Chinese assistance during the recent forum on China-Africa cooperation in Beijing, a triennial meeting between senior Chinese leaders and their counterparts from across Africa. Chinese President Xi Jinping announced a $60 billion package of aid, investments, and loans to Africa. Africa has so far borrowed about $130 billion from China since 2000, with the loans generally used to finance infrastructure projects. So, Vincent, let's start from there with the crucial question. Will this assistance help the desperate Africans get out of their economic quagmire?
You know, this money is not a gift. So, first, it has to be understood that all this money is loans with very high interest rates. Mm-hmm. Payments, the first installments may be deferred to 10 years or so down the line, or even longer. But once the payment begins, African countries are going to find it very, very difficult. And of course, the source of this money will be taxpayers who are usually very poor African farmers and small-scale business people. But also the other part is that the extent to which this will benefit the African countries is yet to be clearly established, because the money that is being used in infrastructure development, first, we don't know really how much of that is going to be spent on the infrastructural development as compared to how much of it is going to be paid to the Chinese workers who are going to be on these projects across the continent, because that's what China is doing. So first, China is making sure that most of the money stays back in China in terms of the material that is being bought for this material. And also, for the labor force, most of the real beneficiaries of some of that money that is meant for the labor is going to Chinese workers. And thirdly, Chinese are setting the agenda. They decide on how they're going to construct this infrastructure project and how, to what extent they will be useful and lasting to the African countries is still questionable. So I don't know in the long run, if you look at the whole picture, if Africa is going to be better off with China and Chinese investment.
Suleiman, given the appetite and the thirst with which African leaders are taking these loans, do you agree with Vincent that maybe we don't know yet what will happen?
My brother Vincent is very correct. We don't know actually what it will do. As we have said, they are very excited, but it's not the first time that they are getting loans. They have been the economies are in the trouble, not because of lack of money, but because of lack of leadership. Unless we get proper leadership in many of these countries, however much money they are given, it won't benefit the local man on the street. It won't benefit the local man and woman in the market and in the villages, because still it will go down the drain the way it has gone for many years. So I still agree with Vincent, and that we are not yet sure how much. And above all, the way my brother said, this money is spread over a period of, I think, 3 to 5 years. It looks so big, but we don't know how much is going to be allocated soon. So the leadership itself in Africa seems to be excited, but they seem to be blindly excited, not even knowing what they are going to do the money with.
I see. And there have been concerns across the continent that while acquiring these loans, there's very little due diligence. Because of the Chinese put conditions, so long as they're part of the bargain is okay, they don't care what you're asking money for and how they will do it. So that element of corruption, visa.
In fact, what's happening is that the Chinese don't care what really happens on your side. The Chinese care about their own interest. They're looking at how much of that money will stay in China. And at the same time, they're the ones who decide how they're going to construct these projects. There's no input from the African countries. In fact, if you ask me, the African nations have ceded their sovereignty to China. But as a consequence, because China does not care about how you run your affairs, it has opened up, of course, the corruption gets even wider, where there is an opportunity to plunder the African politicians, and those who have their hands in the ball are having a field day, because Chinese don't require that you meet certain conditions, except that they make sure they're getting the full benefits, whichever way they can do it. So it doesn't help the continent. It doesn't help the continent if you look at it more closely.
I see. To further to Vincent's point here, Suleiman, for instance, there is a highway, what they call Express Highway, Kampala Entebbe Express Highway. It's deemed to be the most expensive road so far constructed in the world, because a similar stretch per mile in Kenya was built at about a third of the cost. Another in Tanzania was about less than half. So, as he says here, the Chinese don't care. If you tell them you want this, they give whatever you want, so long and things will go on.
Yes, as you have put it, they have put it categorically clear that there are no political strings attached. They don't interfere in two countries' internal affairs. They don't care about human rights. They don't care about corruption. They don't care about governance. So, which means the leaders are free to do what they are doing. The way you are putting it, a 51-kilometer road in Uganda costs three times what it should have cost, and they don't care. They give you the money. The country is indebted. Not only being indebted, as we have put it, the trade deficit is increasing. I think our president here in South Africa, at the new co-chair at this particular meeting, noted that the is increasing. It has increased by 14%. Now up to $170 billion. So they are going to give us the loans. We are sitting on the loans, and we are not getting anything in return. We are giving them raw materials in return. And because of the trade deficit, because of the interest repayment which we are having, we are ending up with nothing.
I see.
So in the wrong run, as my brother has said, who is to benefit? In the wrong run, it is the Chinese to benefit, unless we have got governments which are well-governed, which have got accountability, which will be able to do due diligence on these loans. But if there is no due diligence on these loans, we are losing out the way Ugandans are losing out.
And the sad part of it is that it might be that at the time when the governments, the countries start paying back those loans, some of the infrastructure will be starting to crumble.
Yeah.
I mean, people, those who have lived around long enough, remember the Tazara railway line that connected Tanzania with Zambia, which was built by Chinese.
Yeah.
And we know what happened later. It became messed up and it wasn't really properly functioning. Now, we might have a situation where we have railway systems breaking down, road systems, breaking up, and yet we are now starting to pay these very high interest loans. If the governments of Africa themselves are not trying to create something that is sustainable, China is not going to be around to continue maintaining the infrastructure to manage those resources. It will be up to the governments of Africa. And if you don't, you will see down the line, 10 years from now, some of those things will actually be probably unusable, depending on where they are.
And the other thing is, according to some people, is the lack of competitive bidding. In most of these infrastructure developments, there's no bidding at all. The Chinese promise the money, and they just just automatically take the tender to do the work. Yeah. So you can't compare, or you can't, there's no bidding. So Suleiman, how do our leaders, African leaders on the continent, agree to such an arrangement?
The fact is that most of our leaders are dictatorial. Most of our leaders have overstayed in power. They are rested, they are rusted, they are desperate, they take what it comes. The worst part of it is that many of these countries led by these dictators are highly indebted. The GDP debt ratio has climbed, it's almost coming to 60%. You find countries like Uganda, they don't even have the money. They cannot collect even the money. From the budget which they collect, the money which they are hoping to collect, half of it has to go to debt servicing. In normal circumstances, the countries which are giving debt, the organizations which are giving debt, they are supposed to look at it, and then they are supposed to control the countries which are taking debt. But because they say they are not strings attached, they are just giving these loans anyhow, and in the long run, the concern on the continent now to some people is the debt trap which the countries are going into, many of these countries are going into. That is why others are calling it neo-colonialism, because time will come when they can be able to pay the Chinese loans. Much as some of them are really interest-free, but those which are interest-free are limited. The bigger one comes with interest, and that interest has to be paid back. And the countries don't have, they cannot mobilize taxes locally to be able to repay these debts. As a result, on the continent now, the cry is about the high taxation on the continent. Many of these countries, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Congo, all of them, people are dying of taxes. Yeah. Why? Because they are highly indebted. Mm-hmm. So they need to be controlled the way they are giving these loans.
You know, Douglas, you know, someone listening to our conversation may say we are rubbishing the benefits of infrastructure. Mm. Having a railway line connecting Mombasa and Kampala, of course, is something that should be exciting.
Yeah.
Having a road that is roads that can connect the entire country of Kenya and Uganda and Tanzania, and we can travel all across, is good.
Mm.
But still, we have to think in a responsible way. You don't want to be like an irresponsible father just because you want to your children and your family to live in a nice house. You can't just go and mortgage, take a mortgage that obviously 2-3 years later you cannot afford to pay, because while they may enjoy staying in a palatial home for 3 years, you might have them staying homeless on the streets for the rest of their lives, because when that kicks in, when you start paying back with the interest, you probably cannot afford. So we are looking at the reality here. It's not about rubbishing the benefit of infrastructure. Everybody wants good roads. Everybody wants the railway systems. But how responsibly are we engaging ourselves with China? I think that should be the big question.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable. We're coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight we are discussing China's financial assistance to Africa and the benefits or the lack of thereof and the wisdom of acquiring those loans from China. Our panelists are my colleague Vincent Makori, host of Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One in Washington. Now, let's explore further this issue. Both of you have mentioned it. This issue and other analysts are pointing it out, of the growing concern about rising debt distress on the continent. Mm-hmm. Countries borrowing beyond their means. And these are the loans that down the road, their children and grandchildren will have to pay. These leaders, in your view, let me start with you, Suleiman, leaders taking into consideration that, well, we may get infrastructure projects here and there. Like, I know of a case in one African continent where somebody is mortgaging the oily that's still in the ground, and acquiring loans on along an anticipation of revenue from oil, which may not come out in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and you're leaving this country in a mess.
Yeah, the way my brother has said, it's not that we are against infrastructure development. We are for if we can afford. But the way my brother said, we are talking of mortgaging countries, and it has happened. Last year, Sri Lanka had to hand over one of the ports to China because of debt. So it can happen. It's not a joke. Countries like Uganda, they are highly indebted. They are not worth more loans until when they have reorganized their economy. Even other countries, Ethiopia has been able to get some good infrastructure going on, but we need deeper because we are saying not to mortgage our country. On the continent, Angola has been dealing with China, but you see what is there to be shown of. And Angola, Algeria, some of these big recipients of Chinese loans. But what is there to be shown? Guinea, what is there to be shown? Eritrea, what is there to be shown?
Yeah,
we need to reorganize the internal factors first before we look for money. There are other internal factors which need to be, especially the governance system on the continent, to be reorganized, to be made properly, so that people can take loans which will benefit their people. Look, Douglas, countries which are well organized, countries which are well governed, Botswana, South Africa, Ghana, these are countries which are, if they are taking loans, they are taking, Ghana, the oil is flowing. They are able to get rewards from the oil. They are able to use the finances. So they will not be able to take such hopeless loans. So what about other countries like Guinea, which are supposed to have? What about other countries like Uganda, which might have oil, but when they are disorganized, they won't be able to benefit from that oil?
I see.
And I wanted to chime in here. The thing is, what is lacking in most of the African countries is there is no conversation, there's no discussion about what we're getting into.
Yes.
I mean, we are here in the United States. We know that governments plan for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Even presidents may talk about
and debate.
Something.
We go to parliament, debate.
They debate about it. You want to know how will this thing be actualized in the next 10 years, beyond my presidency, beyond so-and-so's government. Some plans are not about your time. So people look ahead and say, what will this translate into for our children and for our grandchildren? So we don't have that kind of a conversation. A government in power, a president who is an absolute, authoritarian kind of president, makes deals without consulting anybody. Because nobody in his government is going to oppose him. Nobody is going to question. And so in a moment of excitement and on how they think they can benefit individually, they commit a country to situations that will come to haunt them, not the sitting leaders, but their children and grandchildren. And therefore, it is a very raw deal for the generations to come and for the youth of a country. And in terms of how there is, the evidence we can show on the ground, think of, you mentioned a country like Equatorial Guinea. This is a country which 20 years ago became a very wealthy country. It has the biggest, the highest GDP in Africa. Has only 1 million people, but they live in poverty.
Yeah, the poorest people among the richest.
Exactly. Meanwhile, the president and his family members, they live in luxury. They have houses in the United States and elsewhere. So the fact that you can have infrastructure, by the way, in Equatorial Guinea, they have built this amazing modern cities where citizens cannot even go to because they only serve a few expatriates and a few tourists. What does this tell us? Just because you can build infrastructure does not translate into wealth for a nation. You have to create wealth for the people of a country, not for infrastructure, not just building infrastructure that may never, ever serve the people.
Then, given what you just said, Is there a correlation between appetite for these loans vis-a-vis lack of democracy in some of these countries? Because as Vincent points out here, in some countries, the president strikes the deal. Nobody's going to oppose it. There's no discussion. He says, I'm giving the Chinese whatever company to do ABCD. In other countries where there's some semi-democracy, they when there's an election approaching, they just sign the deal so that when the election comes, they have something to show. And they don't care how much it costs or how it's acquired. So, Suleiman, do you think that this one is a big problem?
It's a big problem because, as my brother said, there has to be a discussion. And a discussion means democracy. Democracy means accountability. In developed countries, every penny tax is debated. Where it is going to be spent, how it's going to be spent, what is the duration it's going to be taken when they are investing it. So, and it is audited. After a year, you have to account. The parliament is there, the NGOs are there, the civil society is there. But in a dictatorial regime, it means that responsibility is taken by one person. He decides which money to borrow, how to spend it, when to spend it, for how long to spend it. Look at, for example, in Uganda, where you have said, 51 kilometers of the road, how many years did it take? The people, the Kenyans, built a railway from Mombasa, a rail from Mombasa to Nairobi before 51 kilometers could come from the airport towards Kampala.
Yes.
So look at that disparity. The other one is 470 kilometers, this one is 51 kilometers. So long as you have got baby leadership, rusted leadership, there is no need for loans. Number one, what countries need is not money and loans, because some of these countries have even failed the basics to organize production for a country, not only subsistence, but also to have something to sell out. They have failed to organize good education system, good healthcare system. So how can you give people money who cannot even be able to organize food production for the people they lead?
Mm-hmm.
What is the money for?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
Unless we sort out the governance system, unless the young people get rid of this rusted and old leadership and get new leaders, people like China are going to keep taking advantage on us. Remember, we are 1.2 billion potential consumers.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to supply and get money from us. Their aim is not to help us to grow. Their aim is to take the money. When things go wrong, they will do what they did in Sri Lanka. They take whatever they will take from us.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, the problem is that the current situation, to me, looks like Africans offering themselves for colonization.
For the second time.
For the second, I mean, in the third the first times it was forced.
Yes,
we were forcefully subjugated.
Yes.
But right now we are offering ourselves. Our leaders are traveling to China, and begging China to colonize their countries. And why is it so? Because a colonizing power does whatever it wants.
Yeah,
and African leaders sit back and wait to be told by China what they need to do. That is colonization. Now, why would you want to be colonized in this, when is this, 21st century?
Yeah.
If indeed this relationship was a fair relationship, China would be willing to give you loans, and you have the freedom to choose who is going to construct my railway system. I should be able to have a bidding system where some Chinese company can bid, a Japanese company can bid, a European company can bid, because when I get a loan from you...
You don't tell me how to send me money.
No, yeah. I want to build a road. I'm going to find the highest bidder, and I'm going to get the best of my choice. Now, when I go to Kenya and I go to the rail, the train station, and I look at this train station and I'm seeing Chinese inscriptions, I'm seeing Chinese people working on the train, outside of the train, on the tracks, standing along the way all the way to Mombasa, definitely you feel like you have been taken over. That is not a fair deal. It's, nobody says we don't want infrastructure. Africa is hungry for roads and railways and ports, but we can't cede our freedom, our sovereignty as an exchange for infrastructure.
I see. We're running out of time, but I'll ask both of you briefly. China has some aggressive ways to recover their what is theirs, what's due to them. When it comes to that point, how do you see things working out? Because China is dishing out the billions, but it will come to a time when they want their payback, and they will take the ports and the airports and run the railway stations and whatever. Do you think, do you see that happening, Suleiman, briefly?
It has to happen. Actually, it is not only Africa which is going to find itself in a very precarious situation. At the moment, what is the cause of the trade war between USA and China? It is because USA has discovered that it got a road deal from China. That is why it is taking its stand. So even us, if we are not careful, if the continent is not careful, down the line it will discover that it got a road deal when China is taking over many of our assets free because we cannot pay. As my brother has said, the current leadership is slowly but steadily mortgaging the continent.
I see. Vincent, how do you see
it? So that is the risk. I mean, we are moving blindly ahead without... African leaders are not looking at what the Chinese are seeing. They are focused on the immediate benefits, especially what they can do to impress. And then they are concerned about what the neighboring country is doing. If China is building a road in Uganda, then we also have to speed up and do that. If China is giving money to Angola, we also have to speed up and that. But nobody's sitting, the African leaders are not sitting down and saying, hey, wait a minute. What are we doing to our continent? We're willingly offering ourselves for colonization, and that's sad.
And briefly, very briefly, China has begun also some tactics that are very dangerous. They recently stopped a professor from Kenya to go to
Professor
Zambia.
PLO Lumumba. He couldn't go to Zambia. He went to the airport and they turned him back because he was going to give a lecture that was going to touch on China in Africa. So what we are being told is that now China can actually decide who goes to which country. And it can even decide who speaks where.
That's very dangerous. Suleiman, we're out of time, but briefly, that is a very dangerous precedent. And I think that it works well with African dictators, but it's a recipe for disaster in the future.
They talk soft, but they are cruel. Don't play with them. When they are charging them, and they take it.
I see.
So African countries, especially the population, don't take them for granted.
I see. Well, gentlemen, that's about all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thank you to my colleague, Vincent Makori, host of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Our producer tonight, as usual, was Jackson Mvunganya, and our engineer was the Jolly Joe. Joe was our engineer tonight. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. And I think that's about it. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.